You are listening to the Living Greater Podcast, and I am your host, Arn Allamond. Together, we are building a community of people helping others to live greater through fitness, nutrition, and health.
All right. All right, Amber, so we are live. So hello, everybody. Welcome to Living Greater and the Optimized Influencer. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Tonight, we have a special guest, Amber Warren with Functional Medicine of Idaho. And I'm going to be, she's going to be sharing with us a little bit on gut health. And who knows where else we're going to go with this, because anytime we get talking about this stuff, it's awesome. It's absolutely fun. I'm so excited for this. But before we begin, I just really quickly wanted to run through what it means to be an optimized influencer. And so to optimize your influence is preparation to give the best of yourself in that moment to everyone you are connected to. I feel that's an amazing gift that's rooted in first honoring yourself to better serve those around you. And I always use the analogy of when you're on the airplane, they don't tell you to first put the air mask on the person next to you, on your child. They put it on yourself before you can take care of others. And that's one thing that I feel, just in my experience and in understanding of what Amber does with her clinic, that they do. They have, and she's going to explain more about it because I can't possibly do it justice, but she is the owner of Functional Medicine of Idaho, and they run a multitude of services and offerings there that are rooted in helping their patients live a more full and functional life and lifestyle. She's been a big influence on me over the last couple of years as I've been working to get myself back into health and get rid of some chronic ailments that I was dealing with. And so without further ado, Amber, welcome and hello.
Thanks, Arn. Thanks for having me. I'm stoked to be here.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Your practice, why don't you tell us a little bit about it, just to start off with? I know you guys been a couple of years now, right?
Yeah, my husband and I actually own it, and he does that. He's not a medical person at all. He runs the business side of it. And we purchased it from a physician that's been around for a long time, Dr. Gail Eberharder, who started at the time was called Functional and Integrative Medicine of Idaho. And she kind of was truly the pioneer in the Treasure Valley for kind of getting this concept of functional medicine rocking and rolling. And she wanted to retire, and I'll try to make a long story short, but I started working for her it's been about 3.5 years now. And just coming from the conventional medicine world, where I realized I was continuing to put band-aids on people's problems, right? And I worked in the field of autoimmune disease at St. Luke's. And so when it comes to autoimmune disease, there's a huge correlation there with gut health, with which we can get into, but I just felt like not only was I putting band-aids on people's symptoms or their diseases, but I was putting really toxic band-aids and leading to more comorbidities and more illness. So went to work for her after I just realized I couldn't really hang in the conventional system much longer. And about a year in, she decided to retire early, and we started having those conversations about what the clinic would look like and what would happen to me and the other provider that was there at the time. And it just so happened that my husband Sam had suffered back-to-back concussions from mountain biking, and me, as I knew a lot of the physicians at St. Luke's, had gotten him into the concussion clinic and some really great sports medicine docs there, but he just wasn't progressing in the way that we hoped he would. I mean, any of you who have had concussions, traumatic brain injuries, it's heavy, and it's a really big deal. He was struggling with, of course, chronic pain, headaches, overwhelming fatigue, but then it started to lead into some depression. And he admitted at one point he was starting to have some really scary thoughts. So right away I got him in to see Dr. Eberharder, and it honestly didn't take a lot, we ate really healthy, but just really starting to pinpoint some specifics within his diet. But at this point, even more importantly, the stress piece and the sleep piece, and then just getting him on the right combination of supplements. And honestly, Arn, within 3 to 4 weeks, like, I felt like I had my husband back. We had the man of our house back, and it was amazing. So my point is that my husband became a believer, and he, not having any medical background, was like, this is the future of healthcare. we got to do this. We're going to buy this clinic from Dr. Everhart. And he had a career going. He works in the technology space. And I'm like, are you crazy? So we just really feel like God opened some doors for us and brought us the right resources and the right people to make it happen. And here we are. So it's exciting. So that's our testimony of how we got here.
That's such an amazing story. And I think it's fascinating how, that's in large part what brought me into your clinic, as you know, but was just some underlying issues. Like there were so many things on the top that it was like, I shouldn't be feeling the way that I'm feeling.
Right.
And yet, boom, I am. And so it's neat how, I guess, those passions, like thinking back to the brain injury aspect of one of the things that I learned a few years back is that brain injuries, when people have a TMI, it's more of a metabolic condition. I mean, there is physical trauma to the brain, but the healing process is nutritive, right? I mean, that's I think one of the biggest hidden pieces and misconceptions that I think is holding us back from recovering properly. Right. And it sounds like that's, I mean, it's thankful that
yeah,
thrust into your world, but.
And it's, I think this is actually a really good segue into gut health, because yeah, there's a term that I'm communicating to my patients all the time: leaky gut equals leaky brain, right? So there's just this, when we've got inflammation that's going on within, in this case, in the case of a TBI within the brain, that almost always correlates with leaky gut. And so a huge thing for him was also working to heal the gut to help calm down the inflammation. You've got this pretty intense connection. The vagal nerve connects the brain to the gut. And so working with his gut was ultimately what was able to get things healed. But yeah, like to your point, it's absolutely metabolic. And until you can hone in and specify what that individual needs or what that individual is deficient in, or hone in on what is ailing them, right? Some people can have concussions and not be totally impaired by them, amazingly. You've got some NFL players, for example, that end up at an autopsy later in life having this CTE, right? Chronic traumatic encephalopathy. But then there's tons of NFL players that never have issues.
Yeah.
And so that's where I think we've really gotten lost in medicine, is like, it's not this one size fits all approach. Not everybody fits in a box, right? Some people have certain predispositions. Some people have certain environmental issues going on that are driving their symptoms or driving their disease. I was actually thinking a lot about you a couple of days ago. I was listening to an interview between James Maskell and Mark Hyman, which are two pretty well-known functional medicine gurus, especially Mark Hyman. But they were talking about how our community influences our outlook of either health or disease even more so than our genetics. Right? So like
community does? Is that
yeah,
what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. It's wild. Like they were talking about how if you have an obese father, that's not going to weigh as heavily as if you hang around people that are obese or people that have cardiovascular disease, right? And so I think that's something that like a lot of us, people like you, people like me that are coaching people towards wellness, we have to remember these things. Like loneliness is rampant, right? People that just aren't even surrounded in community. Again, okay, I digress. We could go on a totally different tangent here.
No, I mean, that's great. Tangents are good, and there's no script, so it's all good. But I love that. I was actually listening to a podcast on the way home tonight, and mini tangent, which I want to actually come back around to a little bit later, but the concept of sleep, and I've said it before, we've all said it, and I told my mom, like when I was single before Nikki and I met, and I was going fly, I would work all day, I would fly fish till dark, and then I would drive an hour and a half, back home to start it all back over again the next day. And I was, I was just living life, having fun. They're like, oh, you got to get rest. And I'm like, I'll sleep when I'm dead. Mm-hmm. And that mentality is so pervasive in so many different areas, not just with sleep, but I would link that in with that comment that you made about community creates our outlook. And it can be devastating. I love, you dropped two words. You said leaky gut and leaky brain, or leaky gut, leaky brain. That idea of leaky tissues.
Yeah.
That's weird, right? I mean, it sounds weird from the outside. Yeah. It's like, what do you mean? I know enough to be dangerous with it. But the concept of concussions, and this isn't about concussions, but it's an interesting topic. the concept of concussions, because, you know, as a high school teacher, I have a lot of students that they're playing sports, and it's amazing to me how many concussions there are. And I was a student at one time, went to high school, and I don't remember that many concussions. So whether they were undiagnosed or whether there's something going on now that's leading to more, I don't know. I mean, I have my own inner thoughts, right? But one of the things that that I was reading up on was this idea of leaky tissues. And, you know, I guess the brain feasts on glucose, but it's got to be processed some way. And if these leaky tissues, I don't know if this is accurate, tell me, but these leaky tissues maybe let some of that out, and it's actually damaging to the brain tissue and maybe prevents it from, I mean, a very simplified view, I'm sure, but prevents it from healing at the proper rate. So, I mean, am I even close? Like, am I throwing it in the park?
No, you absolutely are. That's kind of that connection, right? That leaky gut, leaky brain connection. And I think, I mean, that's a really good segue even into something like sleep. Like when we're talking about sleep and being able to heal from traumatic brain injury, because one of the main causes, and I realize I'm kind of jumping ahead myself. I didn't know if you wanted me to kind of get more into what leaky gut is or what the science behind it is, but one of the causes of leaky gut is stress, right? I see so many patients come into my clinic and their diet is impeccable, right? They take really good care of themselves with regards to exercise and for the most part lifestyle, except for stress, right? They're not sleeping, or they're on their screens until midnight and then trying to sleep and getting up again at 6, and they're on their screens again working, and they're not taking time for rest or taking time for play. They're not meditating. They're not having a spiritual part of their life that we know is so important for healing. So if the sleep thing isn't there, you're going to have high cortisol, and cortisol is something that we know damages the gut lining. And so if there's this brain gut connection, right? Like that's why it was such an imperative part of getting my husband to heal. We had two, with each of his concussions, we had literally just had a baby, and they were up at night crying, screaming. And it wasn't until I said, you're out of the bedroom, you're upstairs in the guest bedroom, we're going to put black light curtains on, you're going to wear earplugs. We have to fix your sleep to get your brain and ultimately your gut to heal, or vice versa, however you want to say it. Right. And so it's just, yeah. And that's where it is, just taking like every piece, right? Like you go to a neurologist for a neurocognitive issue or a cardiologist for your heart, and they're so focused on that piece. They're so focused on that one part of your body without looking at like the bigger picture. And that's where I think we've really just like lost such a part of this comprehensive care in medicine, right? We're just so stuck in this like frame of mind that's like, I'm not going to look outside the box and try to assess a person's lifestyle or believe that food is medicine and medicine is food. And anyways, I could go on and on and on about
that. Yeah. Yeah. So speaking of food, we're talking about leaky gut.
Arne, I think you muted yourself.
Oh, did I mute myself? You got me? Hello, hello.
Oh no, I muted myself. Sorry. Carry on.
Sorry. I didn't touch anything. I think we're good. All right. We're on. We're on. We're live.
We're good.
All right. I love the idea of this. And I mean, obviously there's so much technical side to it, but I don't know that everybody needs to know that aspect of it. What I think people really want to know, what I find most curious is a large portion of the population probably is affected by this, doesn't know it. Yeah. I don't know if we actually have numbers or data that, you know, that like in terms of total numbers of people that might be affected, but what's something that everybody could do what are some things that everybody could do to improve their gut health? You know, we hear a lot about probiotics, and we hear a lot about sugar, and we hear a lot of, you know, I mean, and everybody's on this, there's this diet and this diet and this diet and all these different things. How do you make sense of it all? And how much of it is big, I guess, big topics, very, very vague. How much of it is generalizable so that everybody could apply it? And how much of it is like specific? So what kinds of things could we generalize that, okay, you need to do this, this, and this regardless. And then where do we start pinpointing some of the other aspects?
Yeah. That's not a straightforward answer. Can I start with just giving a real quick kind of, for the individuals that don't know what leaky gut is?
Yeah,
can I give a real quick like orientation of that? So So the medical term is increased intestinal permeability, right? So when we're talking about our small and large intestines, we're talking about, with regards to surface area, if you were to lay out your intestinal tract on flat ground, it would take over 2 tennis courts, right? And so that's a really efficient way of our body being able to absorb nutrients, right? But for key absorption, we need it to be really thin. So it's one cell layer thick. So like smaller than a piece of hair. I mean, just microscopically small. So that with that thin layer, it means it's really sensitive to damage. Mm-hmm. So we've got all of these factors that play into intestinal cell damage. Mm-hmm. So we look at, In functional medicine, we start even from just like when you're a baby, when you're born in the womb, right? So we look at factors like, were you born vaginally? Were you ever breastfed? We know that if you're born C-section, you don't get this inoculation of mom's beneficial flora, if you will, that helps to inoculate your gut, which is where 80% of your immune system lives, right? So your first exposure to bacteria is in a hospital, right? You're born in this really sterile setting, and then you're exposed to this crazy antibiotic-resistant bacteria. Yeah. And then if you're breastfed, that again helps really inoculate with all the vitamins and minerals and colostrum are in breast milk. Mm-hmm. Just really helps to facilitate a healthy microbiome environment. We know that stressors as a small child, like I have a patient who has 3 autoimmune diseases. She was born C-section and she was born with really significant hip dysplasia. So she was, for the first year of her life, she was in bilateral leg casts. Like imagine how traumatic that is for a baby,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
For some of my sickest patients are honestly patients that were in the NICU for the first 4 weeks of their life. There was just a lot of stressors that wiped out their beneficial bacteria and had dramatic effects on the microbiome. Mm-hmm. Number of antibiotics early on in life, right? Even we know that those first 3 years of life are absolutely imperative for kind of setting the stage for what your gut, hence your immune system, is going to look like later in life, right? Mm-hmm. So we go and we track that. We, as you know, require people to fill out extensive amounts of information on their health history before we even take them on as patients, because we have to know that kind of stuff before we meet this person. We want to develop a plan and kind of know what their, what we call triggering events in their life were, right? I mean, somebody that has had 40 rounds of antibiotics in life, that's huge. And that's really significant. There are studies that show that after 1 round of antibiotics, it will take your gut 1 to 2 years to heal. And then there's other studies, some of the more heavy hitter antibiotics, your gut will never be the same. But on the flip side of that, going to a more plant-based, high fiber diet can change your microbiome within 24 to 48 hours, right? I mean, like powerful stuff. So we look at things like that. Of course, diet plays a role. People that are eating the standard American diet, their guts are crap. I think the one I like to usually start with as well that maybe doesn't seem as obvious, I've already touched on, is stress. Stress is huge, huge, huge within our country, and it's so toxic to our bodies. We look at other agents, not just antibiotics, but other pharmaceuticals. You know, the occasional ibuprofen that you're popping for aches and pains, but all of a sudden you realize you're actually taking 800 milligrams of ibuprofen 4 times a week for that ache and pain or for that headache, or that is really hard on your actual gut lining. The issue with gluten and sugar, I don't think gluten's evil. I'm not of the opinion that everybody has to stay on gluten, off gluten for all of their lives, right? Gluten is hard on your gut lining. It's not gluten. It's not wheat's fault. It's what we have done to gluten and wheat, right? We've genetically modified it. We've sprayed it in this horrific agent called glyphosate that totally changes the structure. Our body doesn't know what to do with it. So the exposure to herbicides and pesticides is something that we really focus on and hone in on as well. Again, people come to me impeccable diets, but they're not eating organic, or they grew up on a farm, right? They were lived on a farm from the age of 3 to 17 and they had fun. I've got a couple of patients that have told me, yeah, I remember being a kid, we'd always chase the spray truck, right? Or every time the planes would come out, we'd go and run around and try and get their attention, right? And I'm like, oh my gosh, you're gonna be so hard to take care of. You're so But it's true. Like this compound, I just couldn't say enough about glyphosate. It's in our rainwater. I mean, it is used everywhere, and it's not just Monsanto doing it. Almost every weed killer out there has some of it.
Well, not to interrupt, but that is something. I mean, I was wondering if we would go there, and I didn't bring it up earlier to kind of see it, but that's something that I've you know, you and I have talked about it. I was reading about it before. You know, it's amazing when you look at the history of it, what it was developed right. for, the fact that it's an herbicide, it's a fungicide. And so it really, I mean, yeah, it kills plants. And I mean, it's an amazing tool, right? When you think about like creating crops and manufacturing food, it's an amazing tool from that standpoint because of the way it allows to produce. But then you look at what it does and how it kills the plants, and those things like the fungus and the things that help those organisms thrive are the same things that help us thrive. And like you said, it's in every, because it's water soluble. Right. And that's what I think was the biggest, like, and I talk about not this as an example, but I talk about this to others just in science. You know, I mean, I think that's one of the things that is good and bad. Like, it's sometimes we find these amazing things through the process of research, but it's only after we found it that we recognize what it is. And the genie's out of the bottle, you know, it's too late. And this is one. And you know, if I'm not mistaken, but correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that those membranes in the body have some of those interactions with those fungal layers and those microbes, that microbiota. And that can be directly affected by these compounds that we're putting into our body. Okay. I mean,
well, you really think about it, like a lot of, you know, when you're eating food that can hang out on a shelf for 3 to 4 months and not go bad, right? You're shopping from the center of the grocery store. Mm-hmm. All of those foods have preservatives in it that are keeping funguses and mold and bacteria and viruses from growing. Well, what are they doing to our gut when we're eating it, right? They're wiping out everything that could be beneficial, because we have entirely more beneficial things that are going on in our gut and our microbiome than we do bad things, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, I mean, it's just, it's kind of like common sense. You have these aha moments where you're like, yeah, like somebody that's eating processed foods all day and not eating organic, they don't stand a chance.
Right.
So it is. Yeah. You start to put things together and you're like, wow. And it's interesting because so many of my patients can go, you know, on a European Riviera cruise and they're like, I ate gluten. I think my gut's healed. I think I'm fine. And then I'm like, okay, be careful. And sure enough, a month later, they're like, yeah, I tried some pasta and I was so sick. And it's like, cause they don't have that problem over there, right? They eat a lot of fresh food. They don't just hammer the wheat in the kind of crap we do. So back to my original point was, that again, it's not that gluten is inherently bad or, but it's just that our guts can't tolerate it for the most part. Our microbiome can't tolerate it. And we don't know, we don't have statistics on how many people have leaky gut. That's just not something, you know, you'd have to look at every single person's, you'd have to do some pretty incredible studies to look at under a microscope what an intestinal layer looks like. Sugar's just bad. Sugar's just so, I mean, we don't need to go on. Most people are pretty aware of this now, but sugar's just inflammatory. It drives insulin. It drives abnormal glucose levels, which drive inflammation. And inflammation is at the core such an issue with so many chronic diseases nowadays. So sugar's just bad, and it should be avoided in all forms. And I think, you know, on that same topic of, okay, what are foods that we can avoid to help our gut? I think the conversation really needs to go towards what are foods we can include in our diet?
I love that.
Right? And you know this as much as I do, that people get stuck, you know, on the latest fad. Like right now it seems to be keto, right? For a while we got into low carb, and then it kind of blew up into this keto phase. And not that I think anything's inherently wrong with ketogenic diet. I think it's has some amazing therapeutic interventions for things like cancer and epilepsy and for weight loss. And oh my gosh, people's triglycerides will drop like a stone if you put them on a ketogenic diet.
Right.
But in the concept of leaky gut, there's this whole issue called LPS or lipopolysaccharides. And so people that have damaged gut linings, they start all of a sudden start to eat a lot of fat and especially some of the processed, more, you know, saturated fats. That are typically eaten in high amounts on a ketogenic diet, you can actually have these toxic particles that come from the fat, those into your bloodstream, and those can create an unbelievable inflammatory response. So you just have to be really careful. So back to the topic of what are things we should focus on eating when we're trying to really work on gut health. I think the first one I try and work on my patients with, of course, and I'm really blessed. We've got some awesome nutritionists on our staff, because I think when we're really trying to make these changes, and again, this is something you know all too well, people need accountability, right? people need a community to surround them and support them, because it's hard, because not everyone was raised to read labels before they consume food.
Right.
Not everyone was raised to move their body and engage in regular exercise and engage in regular relaxation techniques. So we have a team of nutritionists, and they spend 1 hour with these people, because I don't have that kind of time. And honestly, it's not what I'm gifted at. I didn't go to school specifically for nutrition. So I've got this team that's just awesome, and they serve as accountability partners, and they put together personalized plans. And if you don't cook, that's okay. We can figure out a way to get you healthy food delivered to your doorstep, as you guys know. But oh my gosh, Arne, what were we on the topic of? Oh, LPS. No, we are past LPS.
Good foods to include.
Foods to include. Thank you. So of course it's organic, and that's where my nutritionists really come and help teach like the Dirty Dozen and the most affordable ways you can buy the more heavily sprayed foods. But then it's like eating the rainbow as far as what we call phytonutrients, right? Nutrients that our bodies need to thrive on, right? So eating foods that we know are high in vitamin A and carotenoids and zinc, and so getting all the colors of the day. I've got this awesome handout I give to patients. I started giving it to just kids, but now I give it to a lot of adults even, that's got like all the colors of the rainbow. And I'm like, every day, Monday through Sunday, I want you to fill in what color you ate that day, right? And my goal for you is that you're hitting at least five of those colors that day. Because it's easy to say, okay, you need to be eating 6 to 7 servings of vegetables a day, right? Well, people are gonna go eat potatoes. Right. And they're going to put some spinach in their smoothie, and then they're going to eat more sweet potatoes at night. Right. And then it's like, okay, well, where was the purple? Where was the blue? Where was the red?
Yeah.
And so my point is that eating this wide variety and diversity of food is really what the environment in our gut needs to thrive on. Right. And then right alongside that is usually having a discussion about fiber, the right kinds of fiber. There's actually studies that have been done on mice, but regardless, good controlled studies that talk about when you eat fiber early on in life, it dramatically decreases your risk of autoimmune disease later in life, right? So, and the reason is that these good beneficial bacteria and little things called short chain fatty acids that really help to stimulate immune function, they thrive on fiber. So it's not enough to say, take a probiotic every day.
Yeah.
It's not really enough usually. You have to change your diet if you're wanting to change your microbiome. You really have to start to eat a wide variety of diverse, healthy, ideally organic foods, and be getting enough soluble and insoluble fiber in your diet.
Well, I think the concept of fiber is really interesting because, I think a lot of people will associate taking a probiotic with gut health and improving gut health.
Mm-hmm.
You just mentioned that, but my, you know, like so many things, I mean, it's like, what is that probiotic needs something. And so there's something else called a prebiotic, and that prebiotic is more of your fibrous foods, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, that's something that's interesting. Like they don't market typically, I mean, they're starting to, right? And marketing is what drives, I think it was that conversation a few minutes ago, community, right? Community drives what we do. So the marketing is driving how we're purchasing this stuff. So like, you know, you go down to the store and not that it's the best thing, but you know, you buy a canister of Metamucil, right? And it's, you know, people often buy it for regularity or whatever, but it doesn't say on there necessarily prebiotic. Some of them though, I notice, are starting to do that. And, or bars, you know, I'll see that a lot. They'll say prebiotic and probiotic in this bar. And it's interesting. It's neat because it's coming back around. But again, that idea of marketing, I mean, if I wanted to get fiber into my body as a supplement, can I just take like psyllium husk and just flavor it however I want to? The one that I mentioned has sugar in it, and the one that they have that has no sugar in it has artificial sweetener. And so it's like, damned if you do it. But you need it. And that's cool. And a lot of times when people cut out gluten, they're cutting out things that might introduce fiber into their bodies. So that's a risk that people run into, right?
It is. And that's the problem with like this paleo ketogenic diet. Grains are evil. Don't ever eat grains, right? Is that all of a sudden, we went from eating a diet that was 30% soluble and insoluble fiber to less than 10% because you're hardly getting any carbohydrates in, right? So that's where my nutritionist, we have a very specific ketogenic food plan that we put people on, but any anyways, it's really, really important in a plan like that, that you're focusing on those fiber rich vegetables to make sure you're getting that in your diet to help facilitate good gut health. Because even, you know, a lot of people will go on a ketogenic diet to lower their blood pressure or lose weight or drop their cholesterol. But man, if you're increasing inflammation by eating more of the saturated fats and not getting enough of the good soluble fiber and phytonutrients that your gut and ultimately your whole body thrive on, you're not doing yourself any favors. And that's again where I think it comes back to the concept of testing and not guessing. A lot of people can do really good work on their own and get help from people like you and people like me, but if they're not getting in and willing to do some of the tests and have some specific supplement plans put together for them, and they're not willing to dig a little bit deeper, then it is hard, and you can really spin your wheels and try and guess. So that's even when it comes to the concept of gut health. You know, I have so many people that are like, gosh, I've been on this like elimination diet for 2 years. And I'm like, oh my goodness, how many nutrients are you missing out on? You know, and you haven't made any progress. What are you doing? But, and inevitably we go and test their gut and they've got this yeast overgrowth, right? Or they have a parasite and they've been spinning their wheels and spending all this money on supplements and L-glutamine and all these things that heal your gut and, you know, all the right foods, but they haven't been able to repair their gut because before you repair your gut, you have to remove offending agents that are continuing to stimulate inflammation. And so sometimes it does take more. So that's why the question of what are general things people can do to heal their gut? Yeah, there's some good overview things that people can focus on, but sometimes it really does take just getting in somewhere and getting tested and finding out specifics on what is driving your symptom or your condition or your disease.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I look at you and your practice as what you guys do as coaches, medical coaches.
Yeah. Right?
You're teaching, because that's really what I felt. I mean, and you and I have some conversation whenever I've come in because I'm interested in this stuff. I really like it, right?
And you're smart, yeah.
I know that your process and everything you're describing gives that concept of we want to teach these skills. We want to teach why. We want to help you develop habits that are going to last over a lifetime, not just for this quick, short fix. Right. So with that, I know that, because we were just talking about this the other day, like we were walking through Target, and they've got all of these, they're all DNA tests and a variety of other tests as well that are over the counter. And I think that they're, you know, some of them are for DNA, some of them, I think there were some for gut health, I think there were some for just all of these different pinpoint things. Are those tests generally reputable? I mean, here's the piece that I don't like about that, like personally, that if you go in and do something like that, it's like, what do you do with that information? You know, it's like, I mean, if you suddenly had all the answers to everything in life, what do you do with that if you don't, you know, know how to apply it? But are those, I mean, what's the best path for somebody that wants to learn more about their own body?
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of really good tests out there, right? Like I have a lot of people come in and see me and they're like, I ordered this food sensitivity test online, right? Like I know Everly Well makes a good one. And so help me. So I came off the foods, but I'm not better. And so I'm constantly having these conversations with people. I guess it's twofold. One, and I think the most important thing for people to realize is that like having something like a food sensitivity, that's not a root cause, that's a symptom. Right. Again, we're talking about this issue of gut health, all these things that drive this damaged gut lining, where all of a sudden you have leaks, you have toxins and food particles getting into your bloodstream and your body's reacting to it. And it's leading to chronic inflammation. The food sensitivity, these tests are measuring antibodies to these foods. So it's a symptom. It's not a root cause. In functional medicine, our focus is root cause. We need to figure out what's going on. Right. Back to the concept of sleep. Insomnia is not an Ambien deficiency. Right? It's just not. Like we have to figure, is it high cortisol? Is there a liver issue? Is it the blue screen addiction at night? Is it over-exercising late at night? Again, I digress. So we're focused on root cause. So it's like, yeah, okay. And again, it goes back to this person has now pulled 25 foods out of their diet and they're no better because they haven't healed the gut. So I think there's good tests out there. I think a lot of the problem is too, if you don't have a professional to interpret these tests, to your point, what are you going to do with it, right? And are you potentially going to do something harmful? So you get this test that says you're 3 times increased risk of diabetes, okay, how do you fix diabetes? Like, what are all the things you're going to do, right? Because sometimes it is bigger than just, I'm going to eat less sugar. I mean, that's the first step, but sometimes it's so much bigger than that. So of course I'm biased because I run a functional medicine practice, but I think everybody needs to go find a functional medicine provider. And there's a lot of really good ones, but just like any other profession, there's a lot of bad ones. Sure. There's a lot of practitioners and people, because it's a hot term, right? Functional medicine. Any practitioner, any RN, any nurse practitioner, any physician can go out there and say, I do functional medicine, right? Without having any kind of backing. It's not like you have to go to school for functional medicine to call yourself that. So I would just encourage everybody to find people that practice evidence-based medicine. That's so huge. Can they back up what they're saying and what they're educating people on based on studies and based on current literature, right? I just think that's really important. So if you find that you're getting stuck and you're not making the kind of progress you want to be making, you need some tests, you need some guidance, you just need somebody to kind of come in and just direct your path a little bit. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. I love it. I recently, just for some programs that I'm running, I am incorporating a couple of tools. And again, just looking at, we're talking about collecting data and making valued judgments. And that's right. One of the things that I have found in my life as I've just been on this path is that for a long period of my life, I would look at who did the thing that I wanted to do the best, and then I would model my life after them. I would model my training plan after them. I'd model my eating plan. And I found that I was miserable so often. It just didn't match. And this whole sleep thing for me was just like, okay, this is something I need to get a grip on. And so, using the Oura Ring, I use the Loop Strap to help me monitor those. And not that you have to use both of them, but I've got around. Got a reason. But I really enjoy what I see. And I've been using it personally for me to dictate largely how I'm going into my physical life, because I want to be able to perform in life.
Readiness. Yeah.
When I go in to train, I largely base my training load that day and how hard I go on how recovered my body is, which is a total 180 departure from what I used to do, which was train hard, train every day, go regardless of how you feel. And, you know, if you're not first, you're last, amen to Ricky Bobby, you know, and it's just not, it's not the way. And so that you mentioned evidence-based, you mentioned data. Those are such huge parameters that I think as we grow and the knowledge base grows and people like you and your office and your practice are doing what you're doing, people have the ability to gain the information and the expertise to apply it to their lives. And I just think it shortens that learning curve down so that you're able to get results at a faster point.
Right.
I love that.
Absolutely.
You mentioned a couple of minutes, it feels like a second ago, but plant-based diet. And this is, I'm like, oh, I got to come back. I got to come back. Even if it's after it, even if it's when we're done. Because I love meat. And we recently, my oldest is has been walking hunting for a couple of years and grew up doing it, got away from it. I'm like, okay, but we're in the thick of it. We've been out a few times this year. No luck so far, other than the memories we've made. And
that's the most important part.
It is. But I am excited now. In fact, we even, in the past, we've always gone in with our neighbors on an organic cow and split that. And so that's what we eat during the year. But I even told them, I'm like, hey, I'm getting something this year. Take me off the list. So the pressure's on. So I'm not looking to take that completely out of my life, but I do recognize that there are deficiencies. Anyway, I do recognize that I want to eat cleaner sources of meat, but I really want to go down this plant-based diet route. In fact, I posted a question yesterday what are people's favorite high protein, because I equate protein with, athletics and whatever. And I equate, like a lot of people or have in the past, not so much now, but have in the past, vegetarianism and veganism as being difficult to obtain a lot of protein or adequate protein. I know that's a fallacy and a false belief. But I love what you said, that when somebody goes on a plant-based diet, you see changes in their microflora in as a matter of weeks, it sounded like.
Like days. 24 days.
I thought you said days.
No, I said days. Yeah. It's totally nuts. So I think it's important that we define what a plant-based diet was. Like in my vocabulary, within my practice, plant-based does not mean vegan. Okay. Not that I think vegan is wrong or bad. In fact, yeah. One of my nutritionists is actually a vegetarian. So I think that you can be plant-based but still consume meat. It just means the basis of your diet is not meat, right? Gotcha. It just means that you are, again, eating the rainbow. You're eating a vegetable, ideally 2 to 3 with every single meal. So I think that's an important distinction. I eat meat. I love meat. I'm biased. My family's biased because my husband is obsessed with hunting, and it's right. Like his thing. So we're super blessed that we have all grass-fed meat and game in our freezer all year long. And if he doesn't get one, we make sure my son does. So we always have a backup. So I think that that's of course the most important thing. When I actually think back to like what got me in this thinking about functional medicine and wanting to go a more natural route within my career, I actually, one of the first books I read was The China Study, right? And that got me all fired up about vegans and plant-based diets. But then I look back now and I look at a lot of the literature that is anti-meat, and a lot of it's based on conventional meat, right? There's just not a lot of good literature out there on these meats that are high in these inflammatory omega-6s versus these omega-3s. So I think everybody has to keep that in mind when they start to paint meat in this really bad picture. Meat by no means should be the basis of your diet, right? I know there's this kind of carnivore type diet that's out there. Right. I have not encouraged it. I don't know. And I think it also goes back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago, right? Testing and not guessing. Like I have patients that come and see me and they're vegans and they're thriving and they're doing great. But then I test their labs and they have no B vitamins, right? And they've got no iron. And I'm like, I don't know how you're not a little bit tired. Well, come to think of it, I actually do nap most afternoons of the day, right? So that's, I think, where red meat, it has a lot, not that there's not a lot of like B vitamins in plants, because there is, but it's just not very bioavailable. For the body. We can't break it down well from plants. So that's where red meat comes in. So that's okay. You're thriving on being vegan. You feel good being a vegan. I got to supplement you. I got to get you on some B12 because B's are how we detox, and B vitamin and deficiency can actually lead to poor sleep. And B vitamins are really important in how we make ATP and how we metabolize fatty acids and yada, yada, yada. So again, it's just kind of personalizing a plan for somebody. I personally feel great on meat. And when I don't have meat and high protein diet, I don't feel great. And I don't feel like I perform well with regards to exercise and brain function. So again, it goes back to that concept. Not everybody fits in a box. Everybody's unique. Everybody's different. And sometimes it's like, okay, stay keto, stay eating red meat 5 times a week, but I have to check your lipids in 8 weeks and we have to see how you're doing. Oh, they're a little bit high. Let's drop your intake of saturated fats, drop your meat and check it again. And let's just figure out what a good balance for you is.
Yeah.
So that's a long-winded answer.
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, this is also, and I can imagine that everyone listening is going to think the same thing. I mean, it's great. It's the conversation that maybe sometimes you want to hear, but you don't know what questions to ask.
And
because we just want to feel better. And the other thing is sometimes you mentioned that sometimes we don't know that we don't feel good. It's just our normal. And that's a sad reality, right? But it is a reality. And so I think it's got to be just like so rewarding when you get that, see somebody, you get a phone call or a message or whatever that says, I'm feeling good or I'm feeling better. I mean, that's awesome, right? Awesome. That you can help bring somebody on that path.
Yeah. And especially when it comes down to just like, we've changed their diet, we've got them moving their body more, or sometimes moving less, right? Over-exercise is a really big deal too.
Yes.
Talk about driving intestinal permeability. Over-exercise increases cortisol, that causes leaky gut. I mean, I have that conversation more often than I would like to. And I used to be in that same boat, right? Exercise is my drug, it's my Xanax. And so I used to think that the more the better. And it's like, well, I mean, you know that too, previously being a cyclist, right? Like how much better do you feel? How much better is, you know, just body composition wise for you now that you focus on weight resistance training? Anyways.
Oh yeah.
So I don't remember what I was talking about.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. But yeah, I mean, it's 100%. I have gone more the route. I mean, everybody's got to find what they love, and I hate to take away somebody's passion and dream, you know, I mean, if they, if they're just like totally enamored with exercise and they're always dragging and tired and they're like, but they're just like totally into it, then it's like, let's hug and just go play and have fun. And I think that's the biggest thing. It's like exercise is vital, but I think the reason that we do it so often is for the wrong reasons. I think that we get into a lot of those things for the wrong reasons. And in reality, you know, you've mentioned it. I mean, sleep and nutrition are like the two things that really dictate a lot about our body composition, our energy levels, and then
your mind,
mental clarity. Yeah, your ability to think and talk and just function. And then there's stuff just that icing on the top, you know, so.
I remember now what I was getting back to just with regards to, you know, how wonderful it is when I hear back from people or the patients call and they're like, I'm canceling my next appointment. I don't need to come see Amber. I feel so much better. It's so awesome. But there are the people that, they feel like they're doing everything right and they come back. And that's where you have to dig, right? Again, root cause. Okay, why are you still tired? Do you have a heavy metal toxicity, right? Are you exposed to mold? Are you, is your indoor air really polluted and we need to get some ventilation going on in your indoor air because you live in a little bit more of a toxic environment? Do you have sleep apnea? You think you're getting 8 hours of sleep but you're actually not getting adequate oxygen at night, right? Your brain's not able to recover. You're not able to take out the trash. Men make all of their testosterone, I shouldn't say all, most of it, between the hours of 5 and 7 a.m., right? So if you're not getting good sleep and you have sleep apnea and you're not getting that deep REM sleep that you're tracking, you're not making hormones and you're not detoxing. Yeah. So sometimes we have to keep digging, and that's hard because it can get expensive and it can get frustrating, and we're so stuck in this pill for an ill, I'm going to feel better within a week mentality, that sometimes people don't want to do the work. They don't want to hang in. Right. And that's frustrating for me as a provider, almost as much as it is for my patients, right? But you do have to keep digging, because I always tell my patients, listen, I can spend a lot of your money. I have a ton of really cool functional medicine and genetic tests we can do, and it's really cool, but we start peeling away the layers of the onion. We start with the most obvious stuff first. And if we have to go deeper, we're going to go deeper, because we're not going to give up until we get you feeling better or figure out why you're not feeling well. And I think a lot of what people miss out on too is we're so caught in the mentality of sick care, right? You come in when you're sick. Not enough people are willing to spend the money or the time or the energy into preventative anti-aging care, right? Like, how do we prevent cancer? How do we prevent cardiovascular disease when you've got family history of it, or your friend, like you experienced this, you've got people around you that are getting sick. How do I not make sure I'm that next person? How do I make sure that I'm not just alive for my family, but that I'm well and I'm bringing my best self home? And I'm we all want to age well, right? I mean, let's be honest, that's just really important.
Absolutely. I've seen numbers on stuff, and I can't make any statements as to how much, but just in terms of the amount of money that is spent as we age on keeping us healthy and dealing with problems versus the amount of money. Like, I mean, that's the amazing thing in the health and wellness space, is that in the preventative care space, is how often, and even myself, we balk at spending this money, X money, to be able to find a solution or to be able to feel better. And maybe even a better that, you know, we'll just perpetuate for the rest of our lives. Right. And we just push it off until something snaps, something happens. And then that is big. I mean, it's way more expensive to be hospitalized, right? And some of these things that you've mentioned, you know, I mean, you can't go back from them. You know, you can hope to beat them. But, and so I think it's such a, it's vital. It's amazing. Goodness gracious. Yeah, I knew the time would fly, and it has.
My bad.
No, it's not your bad. It's good. It's really good. I love it. And I this is just, like I said, anytime it seems like we get an opportunity to talk, I have more questions that just keep coming up, which is great. And you've got great answers. It's always a great conversation. And I thank you so much for that. I am going to, so when I make this live, I will be putting some links down below. So if you would like to get in touch with Functional Medicine of Idaho or Amber, I'll have links down below where you can reach her. But Amber, if there's like, what services, do you have a newsletter or anything like that, that
Yeah, we do. We've got a newsletter that we put out at least monthly, if not more. So you can go to our website and just, I think it's a, like up at the, there's a banner at the top that just says click to join the newsletter. And we send out mostly tips and tricks and wellness topics. Usually there's a recipe from one of our nutritionists every week. And then we do a lot of group education and kind of events at both of our locations that you don't necessarily have to be a patient to attend. So we kind of put announcements. In fact, if I can put a plug in for a really cool event we're doing in January, it's called the Renew Intensive. So we've got this nutrition plan called Renew, and it's kind of like a whole systems reboot, right? It's pretty much like paleo on steroids, but it's the evidence of it for, I mean, we have really cool statistics from when we did it last January, like diabetics coming off their insulin, right? And like headaches gone within like a week, and just some really, really cool data from that. But we do, it's a 4 to 5 week program. It's a combination of group education. Again, that community piece is so important. And then you have one-on-ones with providers and nutritionists. And again, you don't have to be a patient to attend that. So that's something we would be sending out announcements.
That sounds awesome. So that'll be, people will be able to get information about that through the newsletter.
Correct. Yep.
Perfect.
Yep.
So that's great to know, because it's not a link that's going to go away after January. If they sign up for the newsletter, whenever they see this, they're going to get information.
Relevant.
That's dynamite. And then you guys are on Facebook as well, right?
Yep, we are. We have a pretty active following on Facebook and on Instagram, where again, we try to make some of these announcements and just offer some evidence-based tips and tricks on, root cause illness and all things functional medicine.
That's dynamite. And I think, thinking back to Eat the Rainbow, I know that I've seen that picture somewhere, and as we were talking, I think it might've been on one of your posts and pictures. So
nice.
Well, Amber, thank you so much for spending this time with us tonight. And if I can get you to hold on for just 1 second, and I'll go ahead and shut us down. And then again, please be sure to check out the links down below. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a ton of fun. I know you've gained a lot of insight, maybe more questions. You know who to reach out to if you have questions on that. And tag into that newsletter. That Renew program sounds absolutely amazing. So thanks, everybody, and we will catch you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Living Greater podcast. We hope that you enjoyed the content, and we ask that you please share with your friends and help us spread the word of Living Greater. Have a wonderful day.